Game On 2FM.
In association with Rabo Direct, the straight talking savings bank.
And you're very welcome to Game On here on 2FM. It's Hugh Cal with you until 8 o'clock tonight. Stephen Kenny is preparing his Dundalk side to take on Batley Borisov in the Champions League qualifiers tonight. We'll hear from the man himself, Tony O'Donoghue, standing by in Oriel Park, and we'll go to him in just a couple of minutes. Bernard Jackman on a new contract for Joe Schmidt and the IRFU. Johnny Ward looks ahead to what we can expect in Ballybrit at the Galway races next week. An absolute circus is the answer. And David Walsh on the Tour de France and Chris Froome as well. Alan Cawley's with me in studio. How are you, sir?
I'm great form, Hugh. Yourself?
I'm not bad. How many press-ups do you think you can do in one go? Just
in
a general.
One burst.
In one burst, like without stopping.
I'd say I could do 35.
35? Not bad. Not bad. The GAA and Diabetes Ireland are running this press-up challenge at the moment. It's to raise money for people obviously suffering with diabetes. Conor Mortimer is on the list as one of the people that has signed up. So the next time we have Mort in studio, I'm going to ask him what he expects to do. He's a strong boy, I think, Conor. He had to be to fight off all those lunatics in Mayo who kept slagging him over years, but he wasn't playing well. But yeah, I'd be interested to know. Plenty of other names besides, like I said, Kevin Cassidy, former Donegal, Dave Moran, of course, for Kerry, Philip Jordan, Tyrone, Peter Kelly, Matt O'Hanlon, and Joe Brawley as well, all scheduled to take part for charity over the next while. We might do something here. I might give you a bit of notice, though, maybe a week or two to prepare.
Perfect.
Just pump some
to prepare.
Iron. Yeah.
Or maybe, is that going against the grain a bit, preparing? Because,
or maybe, yeah, it's just should be a natural
off the cuff kind of thing.
I was watching the Westmead squad. So the entire squad did it. They put it up in video earlier on today. And yeah, pretty impressive. I think they got something like 2,500 between them. In one go. I think they have a minute to do it.
Okay. And what was the record amongst them?
I think it was the total amount. They just did a cumulative amount. So
okay.
I think just over 2,500. As far as I know, I'll check that figure. But
the Gaelic fellas are tough, in fairness to them.
Yeah. JJ, how many can you do at one go? 40, reckons. Andrew? Three. One. One good one? Three good ones.
Okay. And my 35 and your 50. Over
35 is a good one day. If I got 35 now, I'd be happy enough.
You do 35, no problem.
Well,
the big
you
muscles
never know.
On you.
Yeah, with the big arse as well, you know. You gotta take everything up and everything down.
And that's the thing, it has to be a full, proper one.
A full, proper one.
Mm.
None of your positions that you get into, you know, after an amorous night with the wife out. We're not talking about that. An actual press up.
Yeah.
Everything up, everything down.
Okay.
Let us know, by the way, what you reckon, listeners. 51552, how many press ups you could do at one go? And we might call somebody out and bring him into studio.
Get them in, yeah. Seeking the challengers.
Yeah.
Challenge Cahill.
Yeah. Game On challenge for Diabetes Ireland. Very good cause. Okay. How are you feeling ahead of tonight? It's a massive night for Dundalk and the League of Ireland. We're going to speak to Stephen Kenny in a few minutes' time. We've Tony standing by, but just how do you feel about tonight?
I'm actually really excited, Hugh. Really excited. As I said on Monday night on the show, Dundalk are, they've been brilliant now for 2 years, Hugh, and they've been building up to this. They made a bit of a statement in the obviously in Europe last year, and they beat Hajduk Split, and they had a couple of games. Obviously, Batley Borisov, the competition that they're up against tonight. They're a well-established Champions League team. We see them year in, year out. Like, they beat Atletico Madrid, I think it was 2-1 in their home ground last year. So that tells you the scale of what was facing Dundalk. But for them to go over there and Stephen Kenny to show the approach that he did and the attacking intent, it was absolutely brilliant. And for them to get the away goal,
they should have won the match nearly.
They should have, yeah. They were brilliant. They were outstanding. And even from listening to and from chatting to a couple of people about it, Kenny went with the approach because he had them watched 2 or 3 times. And by all accounts, Batley Borisov, obviously the most dominant team over there in Belarus, team sit off them and let them play so they can look like Barcelona in their domestic league because teams are sitting off them. Kenny went with the total opposite approach because he likes to press teams at home here and play with a real intensity from minute one and close them down high up the pitch. And he said that's exactly what we're going to do over there. They didn't know what was going on. They couldn't understand how this team was coming at them helter skelter.
No fear.
No, and exactly as you say, they had plenty of chances. They obviously scored over there as well, and he'll go out with the exact same approach tonight. Now I think Batley Borisov, obviously haven't seen them now, they probably underestimated them a bit last week. They will raise their performance as well, but Dundalk have given themselves one hell of a chance to go through, and I actually fancy them tonight, Hugh.
Okay, let's cross over to Oriel Park, where I imagine Tony O'Donoghue, the atmosphere is building nicely. I won't ask you how many press ups you can do in one go, but if you want to volunteer that information, by all means.
The atmosphere is building. In fact, it's a superb atmosphere here because they're wondering how many press-ups I'm going to suggest I can do. Everyone in a packed press box is in bated breath here. I would say easily 4 or 5, which is as many goals as Dundalk expect to score tonight, it would seem, by the team they've chosen. Because Stephen Kenny has made two changes to the side. Ronan Finn and Darren Meenan are into the side. So Chris Shields and John Mountney miss out. So I think that's very significant news. I spoke to Stephen a short time ago, and you know, people say he's brave. He's very, very brave. He really feels he's going to take these guys on and have a go. I would be a little bit concerned, because in all the hype, and I think Dundalk are a superb team, and they're a brilliant footballing side, and as you say, their strength and conditioning is top notch as well, and their attitude is good. But let's not forget, this time last year, everyone was very excited as well. They had gone away to Hajduk Split and done really well, and were beaten fairly easily here in Oriel Park. It took the air out of the balloon, I have to say, quite a bit. So when you look at Chris Shields and how important a player he's been, I mean, to my mind, he was the player of the season last year as they won the league. I think he was given that accolade by the Dundalk supporters. And, you know, his role would be more a defensive one, although he's launched many an attack for this free-flowing side. Instead, Ronan Finn, some would have suggested when he was at Shamrock Rovers, he was a bit of a luxury player. You know, Darren Meenan, they're certainly going to go for it, it seems to me. So we'll have Rogers in goal, a familiar back four of Gannon, Boyle, Gartland and Dane Massey. Some think he's the best left back that Ireland possessed, the Republic of Ireland as well. Martin O'Neill will be here tonight to watch proceedings. In front of the back four, we have the mercurial talent of Richie Towell, alongside the experience and know-how and big game temperament of Captain Stephen O'Donnell. In front of them will be Ronan Finn, and he can do great things with the ball, certainly. To the left, Daryl Horgan, who's one of the most exciting, if not the most exciting players in the league. To the right, Darren Meenan and David McMillan up front for the Lilywhites. So a very brave team selection, I would have to say. Maybe in keeping with the attitude and the spirit around here at the moment. I mean, we've a long, long time to kick off. If I was coming to you from Stamford Bridge or even the New Camp, you know, in Champions League nights, unfortunately, the way the corporates have taken over, there'd be no one here with the teams, or hardly anyone here. The main stand is full. It's practically full. The stand at the far side is practically full. And what are we, still 35 or more minutes to kick off? There's only 3,200 seats available here. They weren't allowed to put in the temporary stand, which seems to me to be a terrible pity, because you know, you couldn't buy a ticket for love nor money here. Well, you could, but you could only buy 3,200 of them. Delighted that it's on live TV and RT television this evening. We'll be keeping you up to date on 2FM here as well. It's a huge night for Dundalk, a huge night for the League of Ireland. They're all warming up on the artificial pitch. It's often been talked of as well. Well, there was lots of watering going on earlier in the normal fashion, and then the heavens opened, so it's going to be plenty of spring in it, plenty of give in it, which I think a lot of the players will be delighted with as well. So if you're brave enough to pass the ball around, as Dundalk have been, well, then hopefully this pitch will suit them, and the home advantage will suit them. But I would be a little bit concerned that we almost have them in the next round already, because if they do get past this round, it would appear, the way the draw has gone, that the next round might hold easier opposition than Bate Borisov, because remember, Borisov have been regular Champions League group stages qualifiers. So, you know, they've managed some great results in their time. We cannot underestimate this team, that's for sure.
We had Graham Byrne with us last night, Tony, the strength and conditioning fitness coach for Dundalk, and he did mention one thing that he was concerned of himself, and that was that perhaps Dundalk have lost the element of surprise, that Borisov, if they did underestimate Dundalk, they certainly won't this time, and they do know now where they can be hurt by this Irish team.
And you see, I think that's what happened with the Hajduk Split game, in that Hajduk Split got quite the shock. Dundalk took them out of their own game, and sometimes there is a suggestion now that it might be easier, in fact, to get a result away from home. You know, that's debatable, I guess, but when they came here, they scored early and closed the game down very early, and you know, as I say, it took all the sting out of Dundalk. So hopefully that's not going to be the case tonight. There's a different feel. Remember, Dundalk are the champions this year. You know, they're in such a great run of form, and Stephen Kenny is allowing his flair players to play. So it's, you know, I shouldn't really criticise it in many respects, because it's such a wonderful example, and it's the way that you'd like to see football played. You know, the way that Barcelona played, to try and go out there to keep possession of the ball, to play without fear, rather than, you know, closing it down and hoping that the opposition, they only need one goal, Dundalk, you see, because of the away goal. So, you know, if it's still nil all with 5-10 minutes to go, Bate Borisov will be so concerned about conceding, you can imagine. As you can probably hear, you know, this is a fantastic atmosphere. It's great for the town. This is the 50th game in Europe for Dundalk Football Club. You know, they've had such a proud record down through the years, and hopefully tonight will write another glorious chapter in the history of the club.
Alan, how many times have we sat here and said we wish that the Republic of Ireland would play attacking football, go for it, just have a go. And Dundalk and Stephen Kenny seem to be set up to do exactly that tonight, and that's why I applaud Stephen Kenny. I think it's so exciting, and it just would be so fitting and brilliant if they could pull this off.
It's just in his mindset, Hugh, and that's the way he's been
always
for the last 2 years with Dundalk. Yeah, with this team, he's assembled such a technically gifted group of players, but a hungry group of players as well. And for the last 2 years, as I said, they've consistently been so good. And even when he went in to finish second in the league, and then obviously winning it last year, they've just been phenomenal, really have. And that's why it's building up to, it's almost as if the last 2 years has been building up to a night like this, and you see them take that next step. As Tony said, and I do agree with him, there has to be a note of caution, because whether Borisov underestimated them or not last week, obviously they've seen them play now and played against them. So as you say, they do know the areas where they can be hurt. And I do think they will improve their performance. They have to, because they know that if they don't produce the goods tonight, they'll be going out. And as Tony said again, a team who's well established in the Champions League year in, year out, it would be a huge shock for them to lose to an Irish team. So there does have to be that note of caution, but he has to be applauded, Stephen Kenny, for the approach. As I said, I spoke about it Monday. I felt he didn't play Ronan Finn last week for the reasons, obviously defensive minded with Chris Shields, but tonight he's thrown him in. I thought he would throw him in. He's also thrown in Meenan, and they're going to go for it from minute one. They'll have the crowd behind them as well. And a huge factor in all this as well, Hugh, that has to be mentioned, and it will be an advantage to Dundalk: the pitch is atrocious. There's no other way, there's no point in me saying anything different. The pitch is horrendous. And then players, obviously Borisov, would have walked on the pitch last night and thought to themselves, what's this? It's that bad. But Dundalk can use that to their advantage. They're playing on it week in, week out. So that will be another huge factor in the game tonight.
Yeah, it's a beautiful 4 million euro stadium over in Borisov in Minsk that they're used to playing on there, Tony. What about that, Alan's point there, that actually, you know what, a lot of teams have come to Oriel Park and struggled to get to grips with this pitch. Do you think they might struggle tonight, Borisov?
Well, yeah, I mean, there has got to be an advantage to home advantage in terms of the pitch and the type of pitch it is. And Alan is right. There's a lot better pitches, artificial pitches, than this one in Oriel Park. There's a lot better in the country, even, in this country. So it has to be to Dundalk's advantage to an extent. And having said that, you know, when the rains came down very heavily a short time ago, stopped again, by the way, but when the rains came down, that probably will make it a truer surface, that the ball won't just skid and fly away. It'll make it a better surface. And, you know, players like that, when you can ping a ball into a centre forward, when you can put a bit of pace on the ball, and the fact that the ball might hold up in this because it's been so watered now, if you like, both officially by the club and by the elements. So Borisov are a team capable of coming to grips with that, though. I mean, they're a team comfortable in possession as well. The big talking point this week, though, was that their most capped player, the most dangerous player, Radionov, you know, he was involved in that headbutting incident, and, you know, he admitted it as well, and the club said that they'd be prepared to take whatever sanction that UEFA offered. Now, whether that was a coded message to UEFA that don't sanction us, but he's got away with it. Stephen Kenny couldn't believe that, because, you know, you do sometimes wonder if that was, you know, in a higher profile game, and if it was you know, highlighted on television and, you know, played around the world, there's no way that he'd be playing in the next round. You know, video evidence would have been brought to bear, and you know, he seems to have gotten away with it. Whether it wasn't considered in the referee's report or not, I'm not sure. But he is their most dangerous player, and they've got plenty of them. But he's the one with the most international caps. He's the one with the most goals, and he's the danger man to look out for. So, you know, I'd be interested to hear what Alan thinks, though, about the Chris Shields situation, because although, as you say, Chris Shields is played in a defensive role, but, you know, he has added an awful lot to Dundalk in the last 12 months and more, hasn't he?
He has, yeah. Chris Shields has been... funny enough, I played with Chris Shields when he started off, Hugh, at Bray Wanderers. And no disrespect to him, but if you had to say to me he would go on to do as well as he has, I probably wouldn't have believed you. He's the most improved player I've seen in the league in the last 4 or 5 years. And since Kenny has got his hands on him, he's turned him into not just a kind of a bulldozer of a kind of a midfielder. As Tony said there, he starts attacks for Dundalk as well, and he has no problem fitting into the style that they play. It's a big decision, but I'm not surprised to see him go with O'Donnell and Towell in there and leave Shields, because he's going to go for minute one. He said all along, Stephen. So I'm not surprised by that decision. And to see Ronan, I think you have to fit Ronan Finn into the team, particularly in the home game, because Ronan brings you that bit of creativity and guile that I think is needed tonight. Because obviously even though we're talking about them and the hype's been all week, they're still a goal behind, so they have to get a goal. Hugh, nil-nil is no good to them. They have to get a goal. So I think I'm not surprised by it, I have to say, Tony.
Okay,
they don't have to get a goal. They don't have to get a goal in the opening 5 or 10 minutes. They can get a goal in the closing 5 or 10 minutes, and that'll do them. Now, Ronan Finn is the man that can probably, you know, knock one in from 35, 40 yards for you. That's the sort of skill he has. But what he contributes to the rest of the team when he doesn't have the ball in this free-flowing Dundalk way, well, that remains to be seen. So I suppose there is a doubt in my mind, but obviously I wish them well for the evening.
Okay, super stuff, Tony. We'll check back in with you a little bit later on at Oriel Park. Sounds like the atmosphere is electric there. Mm. Hopefully Dundalk can do the business tonight. Celtic are also playing away to Stjarnan. They're 2-0 up from the first leg, but we don't really care. It's all about Dundalk tonight.
Yeah, all about Dundalk.
On that note, let's hear from their manager, Stephen Kenny. I spoke to him earlier this afternoon up against Paddy Barisov, if you just tuned in. 2-1 down from the first leg, but they do have that away goal. And I asked them first how the nerves were holding up ahead of kickoff.
Oh, I'm feeling fine. I think we're all looking forward to the game now. I think we've prepared well. I think it was a terrific game last week in Borisov, and we're disappointed to lose, really, over there, although we've definitely given ourselves, with Dave McMillan scoring that goal, we've definitely given ourselves a chance, and we've prepared accordingly since then, and a couple of good days training, and we're ready to go again.
Was it an eye-opener for the players to go out on that pitch in Borisov in a team that has a pretty decent European pedigree, to say the least, and to realise, hang on a second, we are every bit as good as this team and we can actually take this side down?
I don't know whether it was an eye-opener. I mean, you know, I think another point you're making, but the players certainly don't have an inferiority complex. You know, they played 4 games in Europe last year and beat Hajduk Split away in a bigger stadium again in Split. And certainly they know that, you know, we've only lost 2 games in 40 or something like that. So the players are playing with plenty of confidence you know, that manifests itself in the performance last week. But we do respect that Paddy Barisov are at a different level, that they've been in the group stages 5 times and they've beaten Bayern Munich last year and Atletico Bilbao in the Champions League group stages, and you know, they've been consistently getting in there, and you know, they're a credit as a club to themselves the way they've done that, and that's given us, you know, it shows us the way, really. You know, they're a medium-sized club, and from our point of view, we've gone out to Borisov last week, and we've been pretty attack-minded, and we've asked the players to trust their talent, you know, because we've got a lot of talent in the group, a lot of very good individual players, very skillful group we have, and they showed that last week, and hopefully we can show it tonight.
I mean, it's going to be a brilliant night in terms of the packed out stadium. I know the tickets have been well sold out for it, and there's a huge amount of excitement around Dundalk because of it as well. I mean, is it your job to kind of keep the players focused on, I mean, as you said last week, they went out and did what you asked them to do, which was an attack and believe in themselves. Do you have to keep them focused on the game plan again tonight and just, you know, reinforce, I suppose, that belief that, look, you can go out and win this?
Yeah, I mean, the home tie doesn't necessarily mean it's easier.
No.
That's one thing you learn, I think. But they are seasoned pros. They've gone to difficult venues and got results in the past. But from our point of view, it's very clear what we have to do. We have to win the game. And I think there's no grey areas, you know. And I think that helped us last year when we had to go and win the league against Cork. You know, we knew we had to win the game and we went and won it. And I think that's when it's clear like that, it removes any ambiguity. Like if we'd have got a draw, a 1-1 draw out there, and a 0-0 would have seen you through it. You know, it can leave people in 2 minds. But there's no doubt about it. We have to win, you know, I think that suits us in a way, because you know, we can just concentrate on being, you know, on trying to fulfil our potential and play well and trying to win the game.
How frustrating is it that you see an incident like what happened last weekend with Radionov, and I suppose he's free to play after what was a headbutt, really, on Massey, let's just call it what it was. No punishment for him. He apologised for it, which is an admission of guilt in my book, and he's able to line out again today in what is a crucial second leg.
Yeah, it really is a mystery. You know, it's one of those puzzling, obviously, Radionov, it was a headbutt for no apparent reason, you know. It was completely, then Matthew was caught more by surprise, And it was certainly Rodionov acknowledged he made a huge error of judgment after the game, apologised. We've seen the video evidence and apologised to Dane and said he was willing to accept whatever sanction UEFA gave him. But for some mysterious reason, there has been no sanction, and nor have we been notified why there has been no sanction. And, we've been sort of just sidelined on the issue. So it's very unusual.
No, it is. It's very unusual. But I suppose at the same time, it's one of those things that you nearly have to just put to the back of your head now as well and just get on with whatever 11 is in front of you tonight. If you spend too much time getting frustrated with it, you'd be doing yourself a disservice, maybe.
No, I don't think we are. Like, it's not really been discussed with it in the group, you know. Because I'm asked a question, though, I'll answer it, you know.
Absolutely, on this way.
But from our point of view, we was playing last week. He is a very good player. He's a top goal scorer and the captain and that. But, you know, from our point of view, we handled him fairly well last week. And he will be a threat with his pace, particularly on the counter-attack tonight, because he's lively and quite quick. But certainly, from our point of view, it doesn't change anything, really. It's all about ourselves, really, and how we perform. And, you know, there is that belief in the team. I think definitely, you know, we believe, we've got our midfield players are quite exceptional, I think, and they've shown that now consistently. And, you know, I think they're looking forward to tonight now to really go and show how good they are.
You believe that your own style that you've been playing consistently week in, week out is going to be enough tonight, and you're not going to be worried about, you know, unnecessarily worrying about conceding that away goal. Just go out and do what you've been doing every week.
Yeah, I mean, there are tactical challenges that Pate will provide us with, for sure. There will be periods of the game that they'll have the upper hand. I think it'd be naive to suggest otherwise. You know, the good delivery on set plays and things like that, so it's always a concern that you've got to. We're not the tallest, we're not the biggest team. We wouldn't have too many players over 6 foot. So certainly, we've got to defend our set plays right and make sure that we don't give any presence away. And from that point of view, make sure we're on the counter-attack that we're compact and that from a defensive point of view. But really, on the ball, we've got to express ourselves the way that we did last week and the way we have all season, you know. And I think we've got to continue to pass the ball. The wing play that we have, and every single player in the team is comfortable on the ball in all areas of the park, and we encourage them to continue to be. And to go and pass the ball the way we can and create chances, because we scored over 100 goals last season, and we're well on the way to that this season as well. And we score from everywhere, really.
And I presume the fans are going to play their role tonight as well. I know it doesn't get easier necessarily because it's a home game, but because it's a packed house, I'm sure they're going to make it as intimidating as possible for those lads from Borisov.
Yeah. I think it's unfortunate, you know, we 7,000 at the league game against Cork last year to win the league, and the fact that obviously UEFA restrictions, we can only have 3,000 tonight is somewhat frustrating. For everyone, least of all the supporters who can't get tickets, because they deserve to get tickets because they've been magnificent for this weekend. Well, it's hard to support a team all year, and then it comes to the big game, big Champions League game, and you know, obviously restrictions mean you can't get a ticket. That is frustrating for people, and that will inhibit the atmosphere somewhat as well. But listen, there's nothing we can do about that. These are things we can't control. We just have to. The supporters make the best, you know, the best atmosphere that they possibly can. And from our point of view, we just got to focus on the match itself and enjoy it, and not leave anything behind us, and really go and try and win the game.
Okay, well, look, Stephen, I think it's safe to say pretty much the entire country is behind you tonight. I can't wait to watch the game myself. Best of luck with everything, and hopefully we'll speak to you tomorrow the next round of the Champions League. Best of luck with everything. Thanks a million.
Thank you.
Stephen Kenny there. Obviously, 20 minutes to kick off now. Competition to tell you about to celebrate the launch of the fastest ever Boyle Sports mobile app. We're giving away a VIP day at Galway Races Wednesday, the 29th of July, for two people. Prize includes a 4-star overnight accommodation, VIP hospitality tickets to the races. And before you enter, make sure you can get the day off work. It's an over 18s competition, so bear that in mind as well. We're going to pick 5 correct answers to our daily question. Then on Friday, we have 20 winners. All the names go into the hat, and we'll have one winner who's going to win that prize. Okay, so get into the draw. Here's today's question. 2014, the Galway Plate was won by Road to Riches. Shane Shorter was the jockey. Who was the winning trainer? So Road to Riches in the 2014 Galway Plate last year. Shane Shortle was the jockey. Who was the winning trainer? Text your name, where you're from, and the answer to 51552.
Well, lads, just for argument's sake, if Batty Borisov beat Dundalk tonight, can Dundalk appeal the result because the player should have been disqualified due to a wrong decision concerning the headbutt? The answer is most definitely no.
100% no, because once obviously they've done nothing about it and he plays tonight, that's end of the issue.
Keeper text coming in, 51552. Dundalk will take it to them. I predict a 3-1 victory, says another. There's optimism for you, Alan.
Well, I think there could be goals, yeah, because the way obviously Stephen Kenny is approaching it and Borisov have a lot of quality, as we know. Could be a very open and lively affair and live on RT television.
Live on RT television. Bernard Jackman is live on RT 2FM after these.
Game on 2FM.
In association with Rabo Direct, the straight talking savings bank.
Now, Ireland coach Joe Schmidt has extended his contract with the RFU until 2017. I'm joined on the line by Bernard Jackman. Thanks for taking the call, Bernard.
No problem at all.
In a nutshell, look, this is good news for Ireland and the RFU and Joe Schmidt.
Yeah, it's well, obviously, I think Joe would have been in no shortage of offers from all over the world if he hadn't re-signed. But he's committing for one more year, and it just takes away that uncertainty from the player's point of view. You know, he don't want to have any distractions in the World Cup or the following Six Nations, and knowing that he's on board for the season after that as well will keep a lot of players happy. You know, it's no secret the fact that. The players speak about him in a different manner than they have about any other coach, and for him to tie himself down for a longer period will give everyone a boost.
In normal circumstances, history has shown us pretty close to home that, you know, tying coaches into contracts before major tournaments like World Cups can be dangerous and even a bit foolhardy, but I think it's generally agreed this is an exception to that rule, plus the fact that I suppose it's only a 1-year extension in essence, it doesn't really apply here.
Yeah, no, it doesn't, and I'm sure that RFU would have probably liked to tie Joe down for longer, but he's obviously decided that, you know, 2017 is medium term, and it can always be, you know, renegotiated for longer afterwards. You know, he preaches to the players about living in the moment and having very short-term focus in terms of preparation, what you're going to do tomorrow, and that'll lead to performance on Saturday. So it makes sense, you know, for when you live by that kind of mindset, not tie himself down too long. And also, you know, I'm sure he's a guy who's very driven and performance driven. So he's going to look to get performances and results, and that'll look after the next stage of the contract. So I don't see any downside to it. You know. In the past, England went the other way. England recontracted Stuart Lancaster till I think 2019 last year, and people said, "Oh, it's crazy because you know he's going to be judged on the World Cup." But those long-term contracts have performance clauses anyway. So I think you know it's just from Irish rugby's point of view, from the fans and the players. The important thing is we know that you know we've got Joe at least till 2017, and you know hopefully then we can look to extend that.
I suppose if you were to take a broader examination of this, the contract ends in 2017, which is the Lions tour to New Zealand. It's also the year that Steve Hansen's current contract with the All Blacks expires. So if you were to be a little bit cynical about this, you might say we probably have him until then and there's a good chance we could lose him.
Listen, it depends on what his, you know, I don't know what his long-term goal is if he wants to coach the All Blacks. You'd imagine that, you know, for a New Zealander, that'd be a special opportunity. I think at the moment there's a rule that you're supposed to coach Super Rugby before you can coach the All Blacks, but I suppose these things are movable. You know, Michael Checker was able to change the rules on Australian eligibility to be able to bring in the likes of, you know, Matt Gitto and Drew Mitchell and George Smith for this World Cup. So at the moment, the rule is you have to be coaching a Super Rugby side to be eligible to coach the head coach of the All Blacks. Hmm. But you know, 2017, maybe that'll have changed. And if Joe is still the outstanding candidate, you know, maybe they'll change that. But yeah, both things happen at the same time. Joe's out of contract and Hansen's contract finishes. So potentially there's an opportunity for him to go back there. But as I said, he'd be thinking very much short term in terms of preparation for the World Cup and trying to retain the Six Nations trophy for the third time.
We're still a good few weeks away from the start of the World Cup, but I don't know if you've had a lot of time to think about this. I know pre-season well underway in Grenoble, Bernard, but in terms of how Ireland are fixed and set up for this World Cup, given the squad, and let's just say that, you know, we get a great run of luck and everybody stays fit and healthy, what do you think is a realistic goal for Irish fans looking on at this particular World Cup?
I think we've got to be looking at semi-finals. And from there, Ireland are a team who no one want to play against, because we don't make many mistakes. We're incredibly well drilled, and you know, no matter who comes in, I know people talk about how important it is. We have, you know, we don't get key injuries like the Sexton, Murray, and O'Connell. But what Smith has proven over the last two seasons, and in his days in Leinster, is that the backup guys are able to go in and perform at a level. Mm-hmm. So that's a massive test. Listen, I think we have the squad to get to at least semi final, and you know, from there we win a lot more games than we lose. But when we do get beaten, it's very, very narrowly, because you know, the team is so well coached. So once you get to the semi-final stage, you know, if you get to the semi-final stage, we're more than good enough to go and win it. Now, we're not the best team in the world going into it, but once we get momentum and confidence, you know, I believe if Ireland got to a semi-final, they could go and win it. Now, I'm not saying they're favourites, but I believe that the quality is there to do that.
What about the situation at Leinster at the moment? Is it a bit of a concern that we're still kind of dragging our heels here and we don't really know?
It's a concern for Leinster fans, but I don't think it'll affect Ireland's chances in the World Cup. Hmm. Listen, Leo's running the show at the moment, and you know, Girvan Dempsey and John Fogarty and Cormac Quicken are there, and they know the ropes. They particularly know Curve, John and Leo know the young players, and that's Leinster. I think you've got 24, 25 guys in the World Cup squad at the moment, which is incredible. I don't know any team. I spoke to the Toulon manager yesterday at a referees conference, and they've lost 12, and he thinks it's a disgrace. But Leinster really are being plundered, and you know, for the opening part of the season, they need guys who know the depth in the squad, and the guys are there to do that. And listen, Leinster will be looking, they'll be searching the market for the right coaching staff if it's not what they already have. And it's not ideal, but once they made the decision to, I suppose, not continue with Matt O'Connor, there was no point rushing into the next action, and it's important they, you know, they take their time and they find the right combination.
Okay.
Maybe they already have it, I'm not sure.
Okay. How's the preseason going? You're well into
it. Yeah, we're a week off, so I'm down in Montpellier at the moment. We work 3 weeks on, a week off, and then we have 3 weeks then till the first round of top 14 against the Gen at home. So we're back in Ireland for pre-season, and 2 weeks we play Connacht and Munster, so that'll be good.
How's the sleep patterns of the players going, Bernard?
I hope they're looking at themselves this week. But we got through 3 good weeks, so we were happy for them to get away, and we'll hit the ground again on Monday.
We'll take the show down to Connacht for that pre-season game, and that should be very interesting.
Brilliant.
So look, we'll see you then. But in the meantime, yeah, enjoy the week off, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks
a million, Bernard Jackman. There, yeah, super stuff. Yeah, wow, a week in Montpellier, 3 weeks on, 1 week off. Grenoble in France, Swiss.
He has the life. He has the life, Bernard, doesn't he?
Tell you what,
I would have always loved to have played abroad. Obviously, Bernard's going over there coaching, but just the experience, it must be unbelievable for him. The whole experience of it.
I tell you what, if I had continued my French, I have a reasonable bit of French, but I'd love to be fluent to the point you can go over and get a job and just tap him up and say, come on, give us a gig for
you. Yeah, but like what he's learning, obviously Philip Neville, you see that one during the week, he's gone to Valencia.
Mm.
But the experience that you would gain in the coaching world, it must be unbelievable.
Okay, let's cross over to Oriel Park because Johnny Ward is there. Johnny, first of all, what about that donkey that you own there that came 18th out of 20 horses down in Nace?
Well, today wasn't the day, that's all I'll say, but keep an eye out for him. He's no forlorn hope yet.
Okay, brilliant. Listen, just want to talk about Galway races while we have you. The atmosphere sounds brilliant there. We're probably losing a few, but in terms of, you know, are you looking forward to next week? I mean, it's not, and I suppose racing purists might say they might turn their nose up a little bit at some of the standard racing, but it's a fantastic week, Johnny, for anyone who's been there.
It is, you know, and it's an amazing social occasion, not only for everyone in Galway, but for people all over the country who have come there and that may not necessarily have a huge interest in racing, but actually always make their route around Galway. And, you know, people do knock the standard of Galway, but if you see some of the horses who have actually run in Galway in recent years, you have the likes of Legatissimo, you have the likes of Tarpasha, Mustajib, you've Forgotten Rules. There's some really, really top-class flat horses, not to mind the jumped horses, and you have one of the most expensive handicap hurdles in the world in the Galway hurdle, and the standard might be not, there are a few low grade handicaps, but it's generally not a bad standard at all, and it's really, really good betting heat, I find, day in, day out, and you can't beat the atmosphere there. He really is special.
A few of the bookies wary of the John Breslin Tony Martin combination. Tony got very close to taking Dermot Well down last year in terms of top trainer. I mean, obviously they're hoping for a few big runs this week, next week.
Yeah, Yeah, definitely. The big thing will be definitely Quick Jack, I think, in the Galway Hurdle. Mm. He's going to probably go off favourite. I spoke to Tony when the horse ran the County Hurdle at Cheltenham, and he said that he's, I think he said his legs weren't the most straightforward for hurdling, but he's shown with his prowess on the flat that he's probably very well handicapped, if he can translate that over hurdles. And Tony Marks is an absolute master. I tell you, any trainer that can beat Dermot Wells in terms of amount of winners in Galway, that'll be one of the finest achievements of his career, I'd have to say.
Boston Bob's an interesting runner in the plate as well. Paul Townend's also going to ride Alelki for Willie Mullins, but Boston Bob, top weight, 25-1 shot. What do you think? Is it a bit of a far-fetched, do you think, Johnny?
That's probably a bit far-fetched, but he has been laid out for the race. And he was actually in a few bob from with Boyle Sports today. I got a press release saying he was one of the horses they cut in the market. Paul Townend is very, very sweet on Alelki Inwar. To me, the play probably looks a bit more winnable than the hurdles. Hurdle, there are a lot of horses lurking. And in fact, in the hurdle, what's amazing is Clondor Warrior, who to me would be the idea of a winner. I think he's raised 133, and he's probably not even going to get into the race. A summer handicap, 133 rated over hurdles, and the chances are he probably won't get in. And it's going to be, there's going to be a lot of nerves now the next few days with connections, seeing if their horse gets in or not.
Okay, before we leave that, look, obviously the social side that goes with it as well is brilliant. I've been down a few times myself. The battle is to actually get to the bar in time to satisfy the thirst. That's the bloody problem down there, because it's just mobbed every year.
It is, it is. And then when you're in the Bud tent and you've nothing to drink but Budweiser, you're wondering should you be drinking at all, you know. But the teams are just coming out here as well. The atmosphere here is just comparable to Galway. Quick Jack wins the Galway Hurdle next week.
Yeah, I should mention our new sponsor, Budweiser, will be delighted with that one, Johnny. Listen, come here. Quick prediction on the match tonight. It sounds unbelievable there. We were talking to Tony. Do you think Dundalk are going to do this?
Yeah, I'll try to bring you out a bit closer to the action here. I hope they do it. I think Batty are going to definitely lift their performance. But I tell you, you're watching them warm up on this pitch. They're definitely struggling with the pitch, I think, Batty. And I think that's going to be the Dundalk big trump card tonight.
Okay, super, Johnny. Go and enjoy. Thanks a million.
Thank you.
Cheers, Johnny Ward there, regular on the show. Madman himself. Great crack, Johnny.
He's a gas man.
I tell
Johnny,
you what, we were talking about it. I said, what about this horse you have down in Ace? He says, oh, yeah, yeah. I tell you, keep an eye on it. Keep an eye. I said, what about tonight? 16-1, Johnny. No, not tonight. Not tonight. Don't take it away. But like, definitely the next time. 18th out of 20 donkeys in Ace.
Definitely the next
time. Beaten 45 lengths.
We should have asked him where he got the name. Aye, Skipper.
Aye, Skipper. Right. I think he's only got one eye. For the sound of things. Anyway, 51552 for your text. We're back with David Walsh, and we're talking Tour de France after these.
Game on 2FM.
In association with Rabo Direct, the straight talking savings bank.
Just about to kick off at Oriel Park, Dundalk against Paddy Barisov. We'll tell you of the goals as and when they happen over the next 15 minutes or so. But we're turning our attention to cycling now. A little bit earlier on, I managed to catch up with David Walsh of the Sunday Times, of course, very well known author. LA Confidential and Seven Deadly Sins are well worth checking out. He's in France following the tour, as he has been for the last 3 weeks or so. I put it to him that it was a sad day today for American TJ Van Garden and Ireland's Sam Bennett. Both of them had to withdraw from the tour earlier today.
Well, it's been a really tough tour. You've got to take this in the context of this race has been, you know, on the road now for 2.5 weeks, and there's been, you know, unrelenting heat most of the day. Now, we had an absolute thunderstorm at the end of today, and lots of riders have abandoned. It's just been brutally tough. Van Garderen obviously is the highest profile one to abandon, because he was in third place, had a real chance of getting on the podium, and he was sick at the start of the day. He didn't realise how sick, but when the attacks came, he soon realised he had nothing left. So it's just been a very hard race. There's no surprise that people are abandoning. I mean, world champion Mikhail Kwiatkowski, he abandoned also today, and Chris Froome and his post-race press conference talked about the riders riding in at a slow-motion pace today. And that wasn't because people wanted to ride at a slow-motion pace. It was because they couldn't ride any faster.
It must be unbelievably difficult. Watching the television cameras, it doesn't give us a sense of how hot it is. We keep hearing references to it in commentary. But, I mean, for you over there, David, like, how bad is it over there?
Well, Hugh, I've been coming to this race. I came for the first time in 1982. I think that's like, whatever, 33 years, is it? And I've had days that have been just as hot as some of the days here, but I've never been at a tour where there was such a kind of a group of consecutive days with searing heat. It's just every day it seemed like it was high 30s, and not a lot of air, you know, not a lot of breeze or anything like that to kind of lessen it. And remember, you know, many of these guys are sleeping in hotels on different nights with no air conditioning. So it's not easy for them to get the kind of sleep you'd need to have full recovery. So it's not a surprise. I mean, I looked at that race today and it did feel like everybody was pretty tired and nobody had a lot in their legs. I mean, the break was a big break when 28 riders, they weren't riding that quick. They weren't really cooperating that brilliantly, but they were just building up a big lead because the peloton were quite happy to really take it very easy. And, of course, you can argue that that made it easier for Chris Froome, and in some respects it did. There were little attacks from, you know, Nibali on the descent. Contador made an attack early on. Quintana made a number of attacks. But they weren't really the kind of attacks that were going to cause any damage to the race leader.
Yeah, I just see Alberto Contador has gained, I think, 3 positions overall to jump to second behind Chris Froome, and he's still just over 2 minutes down. So can you, in terms of the overall race and how that affects, I suppose, Chris Froome's yellow jersey, is that going to make any kind of a meaningful impact?
No. Contador hasn't gained anything. He's lost over 2 minutes today because he had a crash on the final descent before the climb to Pralu. And Nairo Quintana is second. He's the guy that was second at the start. And he's, I expected Quintana would have a little bit more than he had today, but he didn't. He seems to me just as tired as Nibali and Froome as well. There was no, I would say Froome is definitely the strongest, but none of them are exactly fresh. And the next 3 days are going to be murderous. Next 3 days on paper are going to be incredibly tough. But if people don't have the energy, don't have the firepower, you know, these stages mightn't produce the fireworks that people are expecting.
What do you make of Chris Froome's performances so far?
I am a believer. I was a believer 2 years ago when Chris Froome won the Tour de France. That doesn't mean I know. I'm not pretending to know. But I have a view, and my view is that he's riding clean. I think the majority of riders in this race are riding clean. I think the sport has changed hugely. I think anybody, we talked earlier about what Chris Froome described as slow motion pace on today's stage. I don't know what the numbers are. I can never make much sense of them anyway, but I do know that watching that race today, I didn't have a sense of a lot of guys having a lot of energy. And as I said, Froome described it as a slow motion pace. Now, this was the first day in the Alps. This was the day for Nairo Quintana and Contador and Nibali to make real attacks on Chris Froome, Valverde as well. And they did make attacks, but they weren't convincing attacks. And Froome really didn't have a huge amount of difficulty in neutralising them. And it should be said before we leave today's stage. I mean, Nicolas Roach had a good day, got in a break, finished sixth. It was an excellent ride from him, and he'll be well pleased with that.
I mean, I'm not an expert, and I'm holding my hands up here by any means. I find what these guys are doing incredible in terms of a feat of sporting endurance. But I have read criticism of Chris Froome's style of riding, the wattage that he has put out, which has, I know, been debated with the head of Sky and others besides him, in terms of the times he's putting in versus, say, the height of Lance Armstrong or Pantani. Do you think that there is an amounting amount of evidence to suggest that perhaps there are more questions that need to be answered here?
I don't consider what's out there about Chris Froome as evidence. I don't think it's evidence if you say he's got an ugly style of riding. There are times when he looks ugly. I would rather describe it as eccentric. You know, not everybody is a stylist. But then again, it's not a beauty contest. You know, some of the most elegant guys on the bike are not the best riders. And Froome has got an ungainly style, very individualistic, but it works for him, and why should he change it? The stuff about the power numbers, Chris Froome was asked about it again today. He's been asked every single press conference now about the power numbers. I don't pretend to understand them. I don't understand them. But Chris Froome yesterday gave details of his ride, which was the controversial one because he was a minute better than the next best guy to Lapierre Saint-Martin. And what Chris Froome said, giving out data on one day really doesn't make a lot of sense, because you'd need to see what I do every single day in training, every single race, and all that data is there. And if you saw all of that, you would have a much better picture of who I am as an athlete. Now, I do understand the point he was making there, because I spent a lot of time in 2013 inside teams. I went to Mallorca for a week, I went to Tenerife for a week, and I went out on the training rides in the car behind. And the question I was continually asking the director sportif, so often I would go with Rod Ellingworth, one of the, he's a performance director along with Tim Carrison, and I'd say, Rod, does Froome ride like this every training ride? And the answer I invariably got was yes, actually. This guy rides like that. And when I say ride like this, it's like full on every day. He really does train incredibly hard in that sense that he wants to win every training session. And
I suppose you can make the same argument though about Lance Armstrong, and that he did everything.
No, that isn't the case. Lance didn't want to be the best at training every time. He wanted to be the best at the Tour de France. Lance didn't win every race or try to win every race as Chris Froome does. Lance was very much focused on being absolutely, you know, at his best in the way that he was at his best for the month of July. So the comparison, but let's talk about the comparison, because I get this all the time. This kind of, David, can you not see the similarities between Froome and Armstrong? We're 3 years into Chris Froome now. When I was 3 years into looking at Lance Armstrong as a GC rider in the Tour de France, I had six people in and around the team who told me he doped, gave me graphic evidence of what Lance was doing. I've had much more access to Chris Froome's team, and I haven't been able to come up with one person that's given me any sense that this guy dopes. I remember the closest I came was speaking to Dr. Richard Freeman, who doesn't work with the team anymore as far as I know, but he did in 2013. And I was at the Giro d'Italia with the team, and Richard, you know, I was having a coffee and an interview with Richard Freeman. And he said, you know, when Chris produced his big performance in the 2011 Vuelta, he said, I was surprised by it, and he said, I had my doubts about it. How could this guy be so good when he hasn't really shown this level before? So he said, I went through all his blood values, went through it in an absolutely forensic way to see whether anything had changed in terms of all those blood values that end up, you know, giving you a bio passport. And he said, there was nothing there that was inconsistent. There was nothing there that raised an alarm bell. Now, you know, that's the kind of thing I've done in terms of I've tried to talk to as many people as possible. It'd be a terrific story if I could get it. That said, you know what? I've got somebody who doesn't believe in Chris Froome, and this person worked with him. In a sense, I'm looking for another Emma O'Reilly, who was with Lance's team for 5 years and gave me chapter and verse on the doping. Now, why is it that a lot of people have been sacked from Sky and are very unhappy about the way they were sacked because it related to their past as dopers? Not one of them has given any indication that Froome dopes or that the team dopes. You know, why is that? Could it be that maybe they don't believe the team dopes?
That was David Walsh speaking to me a little bit earlier on.
Really interesting.
Very interesting. I mean, look, I read a lot about, I suppose, other people's views. It's not a sport that I've ever participated in or ever had much of an interest in because of everything that's happened. And Lance Armstrong, I read a couple of his books. I read It's Not About the Bike, and that just sickened me when I found out, obviously, everything that we now know to be true. And even stuff that he wrote in that book in terms of the way he trained, how hard he went the whole time, he'd have you believe that he was this all-American hero. And actually, it wasn't the case. And so when someone like David Walsh, who spends that amount of time with Team Sky and was given the access that he says he's been given and still can't find anything, you have to take him absolutely at his word. And I don't know if we're ever going to be in a situation where, you know, all the people who doubt Chris Froome are going to have a definitive answer one way or the other. But so far, there's nothing to throw at him.
And is it purely a case, though, Hugh, I think people are doubting him purely based on what they've seen with Lance Armstrong and what's gone on?
Well, there's comparisons to be made to the times that Pantani and Armstrong put in versus what Chris Froome is doing, the fact that he looks so comfortable the whole way around when half the field appeared to be dead on their saddle. How can this be so? The differences in opinion in terms of scientific evidence. Look, it's something we're going to have to come back to at a later stage. But
for someone like David Walsh to be as adamant as he is, as you says, all we can do is go on that, and he has some serious info.
Gamer on 2FM.
In association with Rabo Direct, the straight-talking savings bank.